dropping. VOA1, the hits.
Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Ashley Thompson.
And I'm Dan Novak. This program is designed for English learners, so we speak a little slower, and we use words and phrases especially written for people learning English.
On today's program, you will hear reports from Dan Novak, Dan Friedel, Brian Lynn, and John Russell. Later, Jill Robbins presents this week's Everyday Grammar lesson. She looks at common prefixes used in language connected to protests. But first, Dan Novak has this story.
U.S. President Joe Biden said he would suspend a shipment of some weapons to Israel. U.S. officials are concerned about Israel's plan to expand a military operation in the Gazan city of Rafah that the Biden administration does not support. Israeli officials objected to the move on Thursday. Gilad Erdan is Israel's ambassador to the United Nations. He said it was a difficult and very disappointing statement to hear from a president to whom we have been grateful since the beginning of the war. On Wednesday, Biden spoke to the news network CNN. He said the U.S. would continue to supply Israel with defensive arms like those that support Israel's Iron Dome air defense system. I made it clear that if they go into Rafah, they haven't gone in Rafah yet, if they go into Rafah, I'm not supplying the weapons that have been used historically to deal with Rafah, to deal with the cities that deal with that problem, he said. Rafah is in the southern part of Gaza. A ground invasion would affect an estimated 1.3 million civilians. Those civilians fled the north and central parts of the territory to seek safety from Israel's military offensive following Hamas's October 7th attack on Israel. Biden administration officials have repeatedly said the U.S. will not support an invasion of Rafah unless Israel provides a plan for how it would protect civilians. In an April 4th telephone call, Biden warned Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu that he would withhold military aid unless Israel changed the way it is carrying out the war. Talks on withholding arms began in April, as Israel seemed closer to deciding what it would do in Rafah, a Biden administration official told VOA. Since then, the Israelis have not fully addressed our concerns, and the Biden administration made the decision to pause the arms transfer last week. The shipment was supposed to include 1,800 907 kilogram bombs and 1,700 226 kilogram bombs. The administration said it is mainly concerned with the effects the bombs could have in dense urban settings, as we have seen in other parts of Gaza. The paused shipments include weapons provided for by Congress in earlier legislation. They were not approved in the additional spending law that Congress passed in April. The pause marks the first time the U.S. used a weapons transfer in an effort to change Israel's war policy since Hamas's October 7th terror attack. Mitch McConnell is the Republican Senate Minority Leader. He said Biden gave in to radical voices in his administration. The decision was a shameful abdication of leadership, he said. Israel receives the most U.S. aid of any country, nearly $4 billion a year. Most of it is in the form of military assistance. The administration missed a Wednesday time limit to submit a report to Congress on whether Israel is violating humanitarian law while using U.S.-supplied weapons. State Department spokesperson Matthew Miller said, "We expect to deliver it in the very near future." In February, Biden directed the Departments of State and Defense to report to Congress within 90 days. The report is to show whether U.S. partners that were provided with American weapons have followed international and American laws. These include the so-called Leahy Laws. Those are two measures named for former Senator Patrick Leahy that require the U.S. to cut off assistance to any foreign military or law enforcement group if there is evidence of human rights violations. Josh Paul is the former director of the State Department agency that deals with weapons transfers. He said the delay could be the result of a serious disagreement or just regular bureaucracy. Human rights groups and independent observers have for weeks called for a suspension of American weapons transfers to Israel. They say the weapons have been used in violation of international humanitarian and human rights law. I'm Dan Novak.
A recent study shows that people who lived in caves in North Africa had already started to add a lot of plants to their diet about 15,000 years ago. The researchers examined the remains of a group of people found in a cave near Tafaralt in northeastern Morocco. The people were part of the Ibero-Mauritian culture, which lived in what is now Morocco and Libya, from 25,000 to 11,000 years ago. Tests showed the remains were about 15,000 years old. Examinations of teeth and bones showed that the people ate meat from animals called Barbary sheep, but they also ate wild plants, such as beans, oats, pine nuts, pistachios, and sweet acorns. Zineb Mubtahij is a doctoral student in archaeology at the Max Planck Institute for Evolutionary Anthropology in Germany. Before this research, Mubtahij said, "Most scientists believed people from this time mostly ate meat. However, the evidence from Tafaralt demonstrates that plants constituted a big part of the hunter-gatherer's menu," Mubtahij added. Clervia Jaune of the French research organization CNRS co-wrote the study. Jaune said, "The study suggests that possibly several populations in the world already started to include substantial amounts of plants in their diet." The group of 13 international researchers published its findings in Nature Ecology and Evolution. The researchers noted the people from that time were dependent on wild plants. Agriculture had not been developed yet. They did, however, harvest wild plants in season and store extra amounts to eat later if food was not easily available. The researchers said the evidence of food storage means the people used the cave for large parts of the year. They did not walk long distances in search of food. Mubtahij said the researchers did not find evidence of seafood in the diets of the cave dwellers, but they did find that babies among the group began to eat plants sooner than scientists first thought. The remains found in the cave included those of two babies. The researchers studied the baby teeth and found the children were offered plants to eat at about 12 months. They were fully weaned from breast milk earlier than researchers thought. Researchers believe North Africa is an important area for study because it was the last stop before modern humans traveled out of Africa and into other parts of the world. I'm Dan Friedel.
A Japanese town hopes to keep out crowds of visitors by building a large barrier to block views of the country's tallest mountain, Mount Fuji. The town is called Fuji Kawaguchiko. It sits on Japan's main island of Honshu, southwest of Tokyo. The community is known for having good spots for taking pictures of Mount Fuji. But some locals and business owners feel there are too many misbehaving tourists. In an effort to reduce the number of visitors, city workers have started building a large black screen to block views of Mount Fuji. Michi Motomochi owns a restaurant that serves Japanese sweets near the soon-to-be-blocked photo spot. She told the Associated Press that while she welcomes visitors to the area, there are many things about their manners that are worrying. Motomochi said she has seen visitors crossing the road in busy traffic, leaving waste on streets, ignoring stoplights, and trespassing onto private property. She noted, however, that about 80% of her business is driven by foreign visitors. Tourist numbers have been rising in Japan since restrictions were lifted after the COVID-19 pandemic. Motomochi said her neighborhood suddenly became a popular spot for visitors about 2 years ago. That is when a photo taken in the area went viral on the internet. The photo showed Mount Fuji in the background, but it appeared as though the mountain was sitting on top of a local store called Lawson. Town officials say the photo was widely shared on social media and became known online as Mount Fuji Lawson. Since then, foreign tourists have crowded the neighborhood. The town has tried other methods to limit bad behaviors by tourists. The town put up signs in several languages urging visitors not to run into the road. It has provided information about crosswalks, and it even hired security guards. The black screen is expected to be completed in the middle of May. It will stand 2.5 meters high and 20 meters long. Officials say the barrier will almost completely block the view of Mount Fuji. French tourist Anthony Hawke told the AP he thinks the screen was an overreaction by city officials. He said the solution seemed too big for the problem the town was facing. The 26-year-old visitor suggested setting up road barriers for safety instead of blocking views for pictures. But Helen Pull, a 34-year-old visitor from Britain, said she understood the local concerns. She said she had seen tourism really ramped up in the country. I can see why people who live and work here might want to do something about that, Pohl added. Yoshihiko Ogawa runs an old rice shop in the Fujikawaguchiko area. He said overcrowding there had worsened in recent months, with tourists gathering from around 4 or 5 in the morning and talking loudly. Ogawa said crowds in the area also sometimes block his car. We've never thought we'd face a situation like this, Ogawa told the AP. But he added that he was unsure what the right solution might be. I suppose we all just need to get used to it, he said. I'm Brian Lynn.
A recent report says that 2023 was a record-breaking year for renewable energy sources. Ember, a research group based in London, reported that, for the first time, 30% of electricity produced worldwide was from clean energy sources. And billions of people are using clean energy sources daily, as the number of solar and wind farms continues to grow. Last year, hydroelectric dams produced most of the clean energy sources, as in most years. Yet dry weather conditions, or droughts, in India, China, and North America meant hydropower hit a 5-year low. Research shows climate change is causing droughts to develop more quickly and be more severe. People used more electricity than ever last year, about 2% more, an increase of about as much as Canada uses in a year. Some of this new demand was for heat pumps, which are an efficient way to both heat and cool buildings, and for electric vehicles. The demand was also for electrolyzers, special machines used to get hydrogen out of water for energy. These are all technologies that provide solutions to climate change. Other increased demand was for electricity to feed new data centers and for air conditioning as places around the world become hotter. Solar made up the biggest part of new clean energy last year. More than twice as much solar power was added as coal power. It was the 19th year in a row that solar was the fastest growing source of electricity generation. A large increase in solar installations happened at the end of the year, and the report predicts 2024 will see an even larger jump. China added more renewable energy than any other country last year, 51% of the new solar power and 60% of the new wind power worldwide. China, the European Union, the United States, and Brazil together were responsible for 81% of new solar generation in 2023. Despite the growth in clean energy, fossil fuels like coal still made up most of the electricity generated worldwide last year. The report said some countries burned coal to make up for the loss of hydroelectric power they experienced when drought caused their water supply to dry up. China was responsible for 55% of coal generation worldwide, and 60% of China's electricity generation came from coal. China, India, Vietnam, and Mexico were responsible for nearly all of the increase. The International Energy Agency says fossil fuels release more carbon dioxide to produce electricity. And scientists say fossil fuel burning needs to decrease quickly to protect Earth's climate. Experts expect the world to use even more electricity in 2024. However, as renewable energy generation is predicted to grow, it could mean a 2% drop in energy generated from fossil fuels. I'm John Russell.
American college students have been protesting the war in Gaza between Hamas and Israel. In this week's Everyday Grammar, we look at a few of the prefixes and words people are using to talk about the protests. The Merriam-Webster Dictionary says a prefix is a letter or group of letters that is added at the beginning of a word to change its meaning. Sometimes we see the prefix separated by a hyphen before the following word. At other times, there is no hyphen. This is often true of words that are often used with a prefix. Here are some very common prefixes. Let us begin with the prefix pro. This prefix comes from the Latin language. It means forward or before. The word protest combines this prefix with the root word test. One form of the word test comes from a Latin verb, testare, meaning to witness. You can think of protesting as speaking in front of the public. When we combine pro with another word in English, it means to be in favor of that thing. Let us take a look at some examples. The recent student protests started at Columbia University in New York City. In April, the Associated Press, or AP, reported,
New York police removed a pro-Palestinian protest encampment at Columbia University on Thursday and arrested more than 100 demonstrators.
The students said they are pro-Palestinian because they are calling attention to the situation of the Palestinians in Gaza. One demand of these students is a ceasefire in the war between Israel and Hamas. Students at some schools have held pro-Israel events and reminded the protesters of the October 7th attack on Israel. You may have noticed another prefix in our example. The protesters had set up tents or cloth shelters on an open green space of the school grounds or campus. Because these tents are used for camping, the reports call them an encampment. This is a noun formed by adding the prefix en or n and the suffix ment to the verb camp. The prefix en means to cause to be. The suffix ment makes it a noun form. You may have seen this prefix before in words like enlarge and enrich. Before the letters B, M, or P, it is spelled E-M, as in empower and embed. Our next prefix is anti, which means against someone or something. It is sometimes pronounced anti or ante. The United States has had a long history of anti-war protests, and the recent student protests follow that tradition. But another use of this prefix is related to these protests. On April 23rd, the AP reported that New York University, or NYU, said it learned of reports of intimidating chants and several anti-Semitic incidents. Anti-Semitic is a term that describes hatred of Jewish people. Pil Yun, a student taking part in the protests at NYU, said,
"Anti-Semitism is never okay. That's absolutely not what we stand for. And that's why there are so many Jewish comrades that are here with us today."
Jewish students at other campuses said they were intimidated or fearful of the protesters. This brings us to a similar prefix, counter, which means as a reaction against. There have been a number of counter-protests in favor of Israel. At the University of California at Los Angeles, or UCLA, on April 30th, counter-demonstrators attacked the pro-Palestinian encampment. The AP reported that UCLA President Carol Folt said,
"This week, Alumni Park became unsafe."
The prefix un means the opposite of the word that follows it. So unsafe is not safe. Our final prefix is di or die, which can mean divided into two or separate from. Another of the students' demands is that the university divest its financial ties to Israel or companies that help support the war. You have probably seen the word invest, which can mean to gain ownership interest in a business. Divest has the opposite meaning, to take away or sell interest in a business. The AP reported that
at Brown University in Rhode Island, administrators agreed to consider a vote to divest from Israel in October, apparently the first U.S. college to agree to such a demand.
In this lesson, we have looked at the prefixes pro, en, anti, counter, un, and die. The verbs in our examples included protest, camp, and divest. Write to us about protests you have experienced using one or more of these prefixes and the words that follow. Email us at learningenglish@voanews.com or write to us in the comments. And that's Everyday Grammar. I'm Jill Robbins.
That was Jill Robbins with this week's Everyday Grammar lesson. She is here now to talk more about the topic. Hi, Jill. Thanks for being on the show today.
Hi, Ashley. Good to be here.
This week, you looked at several prefixes that are used when talking about protests. Which of these prefixes do you feel might be especially difficult to understand for our listeners?
I think the last one I mentioned, die, is kind of difficult. The meaning is often given as two, but it can also mean to separate into two parts or to move away from something.
Right. So many student groups taking part in these pro-Palestinian protests in the U.S. and Europe are demanding that their universities divest from businesses related to Israel or the war.
The prefix die is actually a shortened form of the Latin prefix dis, which we use more often in words like dishonest or not telling the truth, and discard, to throw away.
I noticed we hear pro and anti often in news reports related to the protests.
That's right, and I never thought of it before, but the word protest itself uses the prefix pro.
And what is the opposite of pro? Is it con?
That's the noun we often pair with pro, but the prefix we use is anti.
Okay. And you said there are three different pronunciations of anti.
Yes, it might be confusing for our listeners. They are anti, anti, and ante.
Okay. Thanks again, Jill, for joining us today. And thank you for that lesson.
Thank you, Ashley.
And that's our program for today. Join us again tomorrow to keep learning English through stories from around the world. I'm Ashley Thompson.
And I'm Dan Novak.